evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 14, 2021. A border dispute looms between Ethiopia and Sudan.
We have been so patient about a number of threats, intimidations, and humiliation. When are we going to break this silence? Until when are we going to keep on watching this happen? And until when are we going to keep holding to our patience?
An activist in Jonglei State criticized the state governor for being an absentee.
The governor had been absent for 5 months, and since the time of disastrous flood, we have been alone and we were surviving alone.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Tension over a land dispute has been looming along the Sudan-Ethiopia border for the past few weeks. The Sudanese government says its forces have taken control of Al-Fashaga border area after weeks of clashes with Ethiopian militia forces. The head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, visited the area on Wednesday and said his government will defend the territory at all cost. The Ethiopian government has accused Sudan of taking advantage of the internal conflict in the Tigray region. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
There is an escalation in tensions between Sudan and Ethiopia. It started after a pro-Ethiopian government militia launched a series of attacks on Sudanese military bases and local farmers. Late last week, the Sudanese Foreign Ministry issued a statement condemning the killing of 7 people, including women and a child, by Ethiopian armed groups along the border. Shortly after the border attack, the Sudanese army advance took full control of the Al-Fashaga border area, some 22 kilometers east of Al-Gadarif state. Clashes between Sudanese and Ethiopians have occurred in recent weeks over agricultural land in Al-Fashaga, an area that lies within Sudan's international boundaries but has been settled by Ethiopian farmers for years. The head of the Sudan Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, spoke to Sudanese armed forces in Al-Fashaga on Wednesday and confirmed the Sudanese army is in full control of Al-Fashaga. Al-Burhan says the army will defend the territory at any cost. Sudan has taken no action for more than 25 years over its territorial dispute with Ethiopia, said Al-Burhan, but no more.
We have been so patient about a number of threats, intimidations, and humiliation. When are we going to break this silence? Until when are we going to keep on watching this happen? And until when are we going to keep holding to our patience? There are limits for all situations, and I think this is beyond our limit. This is our land, it is our right, and we are ready to die here.
Al-Burhan says Sudan-Ethiopian relations have been strong for decades and wonders why Sudan has now become a target.
We did not expect any sort of confrontation with our neighbor Ethiopia. They are the ones who began attacking our positions. Few days ago, they killed our women, and before that, they also killed our local farmers, burned our land, and occupied our land. They claim that this is their land and are accusing Sudan of occupying their territory. This is our land, whether they like it or not.
Talks between the two countries over the border dispute broke down last week. Sudanese officials say Ethiopia has not lodged a formal complaint about the border. The area was demarcated decades ago. Al-Burhan extended his condolences to the families of Sudanese forces and civilians killed by Ethiopian armed groups in recent days. He says Sudan will always be a welcoming country, but will never compromise on its sovereignty.
Our people have been living with Ethiopians here for hundreds of years, and this is because of our open hearts and good hospitality. Our Sudanese nature doesn't allow us to kill women and children, but anyone who decides to carry out such an act, we are ready to respond in kind.
The Ethiopian government has not claimed any responsibility on the killing of the Sudanese civilians. According to the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, Sudan now hosts more than 50,000 Ethiopian refugees who fled deadly violence between the Ethiopian National Forces and the regional forces in the Tigray region. Al-Burhan told Sudanese troops the government will reclaim more of its territory occupied by Ethiopians. He says all scenarios are possible.
We will continue to support you until we take back our full right. All means are possible, be it through dialogue or force or any other means. This is our land and we have the right to defend and protect it. All means are possible to defend our country and provide protection to our people.
The Ethiopian government accuses Sudan of carrying out attacks on the farmers starting in early November 2020. It says it regards the recent move by the Sudanese army as a deliberate attempt to occupy their land. Separately, Sudan, Ethiopia, and Egypt have so far failed to end their months-long dispute over the filling and operation of the billion-dollar grant Ethiopia Renaissance Dam. The three countries have agreed to seek guidance from the African Union's expert on the matter. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still in Ethiopia, authorities in Addis Ababa said Wednesday that its military killed three members of the Tigray region's former ruling party, including former Ethiopian Foreign Minister Seyoum Mesfin, who once mediated the South Sudan talks in Addis Ababa. The Ethiopia's government task force on the Tigray crisis said on Twitter that three Tigray People's Liberation Front officials were killed after they refused to surrender to the military. Masenbet Aswa is the assistant professor of law at Addis Ababa University School of Law.
The state media is reporting that three senior former government officials and members of the TPLF that defected and that attacked the northern base have been killed today. So one of them is a very prominent political figure, Mr. Seyoum Mesfin, who served as a foreign minister for Ethiopia before the political transition, before Abiy came into power. So that's the news, the big news coming here in Ethiopia today. The two officials are Asmellash Woldeslase, a very senior also inner circle of the TPLF, and also Abay Zahaye, another member of the senior political leadership of TPLF.
The report says that the former foreign minister and others refused to surrender. What side was this former foreign minister on? Was he part of the TPLF? Because he was former foreign minister.
James, it makes it very tragic in a sense because for someone that has served, by the way, I think if I'm not mistaken, he should be the longest serving foreign minister in Ethiopia. He has been very active also in foreign missions, in mediation processes in South Sudan, in many other places. He had a very prominent place in the diplomatic circle as well. So that makes it very tragic, you know. So even if there are political differences between the Abiy's administration and the TPLF, you would think for someone who has served at a regional level, even at a very international level, that they would at least sidestep from political confrontations between parties. But apparently he sided within the TPLF, and the rift became stronger between Abiy and the TPLF circle, as you know. And he was one of the leaders involved also in the attacks against the northern base, and obviously chose to be within the defecting group in the TPLF. That makes it very tragic. And as you said, the military spokesperson that briefed regarding the killing, it's not only the killing of the three senior political officers of the TPLF, but others have been also captured. Very senior military officials have been captured. So what the spokesperson for the military said today is that the three individuals, including Seyoum Mesfin, the foreign minister, were asked actually to surrender. They refused and action was taken and they were killed in action.
Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed declared victory, that the conflict was over. What does this mean? Does this mean the TPLF is continuing to fight on?
It cannot, because I have said this also, I think, during our previous conversation. You know, for any kind of, let's say, guerrilla warfare and military engagement to continue, there should be some moral ground in which you can actually galvanize public action for whatever purpose you want to do. So, you know, when the people of Tigray did that during the Derg regime. Obviously, it was a very brutal military dictatorship. They co-opted with other groups in terms of overthrowing the Mengistu Haile Mariam's regime at that time. But Abiy's political position, however political predicament that he has, it's very difficult to justify war on Abiy's government currently and the reforms that are undertaken in Ethiopia. So it's true what you said. After 3 weeks of military engagement, conventional war was over when the capital city in Tigray, Mekelle, was occupied by Ethiopian defense forces. That is, I think, very clear. So what you see now is that other kinds of sporadic military engagement in the countryside, in Tigray region, where they have been hiding. So I think 2 days ago, another senior, almost a kind of kingmaker of the TPLF, Sabahat Nega, was also captured. I see this as a culmination of actually the military engagement rather than a continuation of the insurrection, because the talk of war, guerrilla warfare, cannot be sustainable in Tigray, both on moral grounds and on a military and security grounds.
Thank you so much again, Doc. We so appreciate very much speaking with you always. Thank you.
Thank you, James, for the opportunity.
That's Masenbet Asfa, an assistant professor of law at the Addis Ababa University School of Law. He spoke with my colleague James Badi. Aid workers this week confirmed several cases of COVID-19 in Sudan's camp for refugees who fled the fighting in Ethiopia's Tigray region. The United Nations Refugee Agency and aid group Mercy Corps say an urgent intervention is needed to avoid a humanitarian disaster. For VOA News, Naba Mohiedin reports from Khartoum.
Aid organizations reported 4 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Sudan's Umm Rakuba camp for Ethiopian refugees this week. The camp houses 25,000 people who have arrived since November, living in very basic overcrowded conditions that present an opportunity for the coronavirus to easily spread. Mercy Corps is running a health clinic in the Umm Rakuba camp and has treated nearly 5,000 refugees. The group's regional director, Sean Granville-Ross, called for a swift and decisive action to prevent further spread of the virus.
It's really a matter of grave concern for all of us, given the conditions of the camp, the vulnerability of the people, the population density, which makes social distancing very difficult, and the lack of materials, PPE, and equipment to enable us to really manage this outbreak and take care of the people.
The 4 people confirmed to have COVID-19 have been quarantined, says UNHCR Officer Julia Raffaelli.
Confirmed positive cases undergo isolation and, upon contact tracing, primary contact pending their test results. More activities are being set up, such as communication with communities and the realization of isolation centers, and more funding is needed in order to ramp up the response.
Sudanese authorities received aid from UAE and other Arab countries to help the Ethiopian refugees in December. Health observers say more money is needed due to the increasing influx and the growing risk of COVID-19. Sudan has registered more than 23,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19 since late October, with more than 2,000 deaths. Meanwhile, Sudan's government and aid organizations have finished preparations to move the refugees to a new camp west of Al-Qadarif. The government says the move will take refugees away from the tense border area and improve security. Naba Muhiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Ugandans voted in presidential and parliamentary elections. Find out how the mood has been in Kampala right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
What is the mode of travel you most often use to get to work?
Thank God I have a car for over 9 years, so I drive my car to go to my workplace. But sometimes if there has a problem, I use tricycle.
I usually use the minibuses, but more oftenly I just walk from where I live because within the area that I work.
I have an old bicycle. I ride on it anytime I'm going to work.
I use the public transport to work most of the time because it's easily accessible and it takes me to where I'm going.
I ride in my husband's car to work. He has his own car, so every morning he picks me and drops me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A South Sudanese doctor who is saving lives at a hospital in South Africa says he believes his story will inspire young South Sudanese who wants to make change in their country. Dr. Emmanuel Malesh Taban, who went to St. Joseph Primary School in Juba, says he would like to establish schools in South Sudan once the guns are silent. He says young South Sudanese could become world leaders if given opportunity to study.
It should be a very good and a victory for people of South Sudan. The reason that is showing that in South Sudan, we have the capabilities to match the rest of the world. However, we need to make sure that all the children in South Sudan hear the story that a child who was homeless, who used to go barefoot, has done something great in the world, who is being cherished by the rest of the world. And if the same opportunity are given to children back in South Sudan, they will exactly do the same. So I would like to continue performing bronchoscopy and, if possible, try to train other people to get involved in performing bronchoscopies.
Dr. Emmanuel, I'm just a layman. Could you explain this medical term, bronchoscopy, and what procedure is involved in it?
Yeah, basically, when you have a coronavirus and you got a severe disease, you cannot breathe anymore, we put you on called life support. It's a machine that breathes for you. And when you're in machine for 5 to 7 days, your lungs, because the tube bypass your mechanism for it to get the mucus out, you start forming mucus that block your airway, and most people would die on the life support. So basically what I did was to pass a small tube that contained light, a small pipe for suctioning, and small pipe for biopsying inside the lung, and looking for those mucus. If those mucus are there, I remove them, then you can breathe properly and you have your life back. That's basically what we do. And we save lives. For out of 40 people that we did, 40 to 50, we have 90% of them survive. So I'm very glad that they are put to be able to save lives.
Amazing. Your story have caught the attention of the world, and most of the time when I was trying to get hold of you, you text me back to say you are in your theater. Do you have time for your family?
No, I think since I've been since I struggle to be with the family. I work with my wife. She's a physiotherapist. Our role is actually to take mucus out using people that are not on ventilator. So, yes, I work about 14 to 16 hours every day, Monday to Sunday, because at this moment, I don't think that we should complain of being tired. I think the call of saving lives is more important than actually being tired. You cannot be tired when someone is losing their own lives. We should be more working hard to save more lives, if possible, and that's always been my call. So, yes, I don't see my children that much. I see them maybe once a week, but I think we'll catch up during the holiday once the COVID-19 has subsided.
You know, Dr. Taban, this is a common scenario in South Sudan when you meet and you are all from different parts of the country. There's this question where you normally hear Itamin Wen, which means where are you from?
I was born in Juba. Then I grew up in Lokaran called Elanya country. I'm a Pojuluba tribe. And yeah, so then I went to St. Joseph Primary School in Juba and half a year in Komboni before I left the country. But I don't normally like to say I'm from Equatorial because I don't believe that you need to be Equatorial. I'm a South Sudanese and I'm proud to be a South Sudanese. I don't believe in tribalism, neither on the tribe space. I believe that as a South Sudan, we're all one and we need to work together to become as a one country.
I'm sure teachers and students at St. Joseph Primary School in Juba, after listening to this interview, will be inspired by your story. I must tell you, I also went to St. Joseph Primary School.
Well, St. Joseph is a good school, and I'm always very proud to be part of the product of the St. Joseph. And my dream and a wish that hopefully one day, maybe a year or two, I would like to embark on a project prior to build schools in South Sudan.
What is the responses from your other colleagues, from doctors around the world to this procedure that you are performing? And it's my understanding that the World Health Organization does not advise doctors to do bronchoscopy.
I do get quite few response from Europe and Germany, for instance. I mean, they're doing bronchoscopies. All the other most countries are doing them. I mean, you don't do something because you're waiting to be appreciated by the rest of the world. Even Jesus Christ was not loved by everybody. But as time goes on, people get to appreciate what we have done and the fact that we are the first in Africa to start doing the procedure, and hopefully the rest of the world will follow. Whether they acknowledge it or not, I think that's not important.
That's Dr. Emmanuel Malesh Taban, a South Sudanese doctor saving lives in South Africa. He was speaking to me from Pretoria on Tuesday. Some activists and residents in the Jonglei State Capital, Bor, are criticizing the state governor for being absent from the office. Some residents say there's widespread insecurity across the state and the governor should show leadership by addressing the issues affecting the state. Governor Chagoe says he is in Juba to work on the formation of the transitional government of national unity at state and county levels. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
Bor resident Samuel Agul says Governor Chagoe should be at his duty station in Bor, focused on issues affecting state citizens, like controlling the floods that displaced thousands of people in the area.
The governor had been absent for 5 months, and since the time of disastrous flood, we have been alone and we were surviving alone. There was no any assistance. And now when there is no follow-up by the government, there is an opportunity for the government to intervene and refer the dike by now.
Bol Dengbol, an activist with the Bor-based advocacy group Intrepid South Sudan, says insecurity and crime are widespread across Jonglei State. He says Chagoe should be in Bor to deal with those problems.
The governor has taken a very long time without coming to the workstation, which is Jonglei State. So, you know, having kept himself away from the work area, you know, has contributed a lot in so much that has been happening, like the insecurity cases. The absence of the governor has deteriorated, these efforts, you know, to curtail all these insecurity issues.
Since he left Bor for Juba last August to report to President Salva Kiir on the condition of flooding across the state, Chagoe has only been seen online posting pictures with the president, according to Bor.
Humanitarian organizations have often said the government should lead and then we follow. And this, I agree with that. If the government of the land is not in place, it's keeping silent. And then how do we expect somebody from outside, to come and support you?
Bol says Governor Chagoe should return to Bor immediately. Chagoe heads the South Sudan United Movement, part of an umbrella group of opposition parties called the South Sudan Opposition's Alliance, or SOA, which signs the revitalized peace agreement. Chagoe says he needs to be in Juba to consult with other opposition party leaders as they work on forming the transitional government at the state level.
We now have some of the deputy governors. We will go to the ministers and we'll go to county commissioners. And so in all that, for me, being a leader of a party also within SOA, I need my presence because I have to be in consultation with the party. So we are doing that.
Chagoe says party leaders hope to complete that work by early next week. He says he is also busy lobbying central government officials to support the building of a bigger dike that will control flooding in Jonglei State.
That bigger dike would give us the confidence that when rainy season comes, when the river rises, when the rain drops, you know, we will not go into the situation that we went to this year, last year. And so I'm also talking here in Cuba with the federal government that something needs to be done right away.
Governor Chagoe says he was saddened to hear an unidentified gunman killed an 8-month-old child in Makolichwe last weekend. To combat the widespread insecurity in the state, Chagur says he is asking national government officials to increase the number of security forces in Jonglei to fight crime across the state. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
Polls have opened in Uganda's elections, pitting longtime leader Yoweri Museveni against musician turned politician Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine. Authorities in Kampala blocked internet access ahead of the elections, as Alima Athumani reports from Kampala.
As polls opened in Uganda Thursday morning, internet access was still cut off from the night before as authorities sought to limit access to information and social media. Over 17 million voters are expected to cast their ballots to elect lawmakers and choose a president among 10 candidates. 76-year-old President Yoweri Museveni, who has been in power since 1986, is facing off against musician-turned-politician Robert Kyagulanyi, known as Bobi Wine, who is half his age. Uganda's Electoral Commission said voting would start at 7 in the morning. But at some polling stations in Jinja District, voters like Harriet Akulo had to wait until 9 o'clock as ballot papers arrived late.
People came early. They expected to vote early so that we move on. Come what may, I have to vote, and I don't want other people to decide for me.
Millions of young Ugandans are voting for the first time, and some, like 19-year-old Evans Mukasa, are hoping for a change after 3 decades under the same president.
We are a community of change. We are the youth today and the fathers tomorrow. We've been into this situation for a couple of years. It's not that I'm speaking because Museveni is in power, but as Uganda, we need to know our future. Yeah, so we are making our legacy. We are the regeneration now.
UN rights officials warned Sunday the elections were unlikely to be free and fair. Campaigning was marred by violence that left 56 people dead, rights violations and restrictions on opposition candidates and supporters. In line to cast his ballot, Yemeni Ugandan Ali Hamad said it was important to vote nonetheless.
If in campaigns it was really violent, what of just voting? But it's good you show the candidate I'm going to vote so that the winner or the one who has rigged will know that, these people really had their support.
The U.S. ambassador to Uganda, Natalie Brown, on Wednesday said the U.S. would not observe the election because authorities denied more than 75% of their accreditation requests. Polls close at 4 in the afternoon, Ugandan time, and results will be announced by Saturday afternoon. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with Brenda Fassi and the song Noma Kanje. Been listening to Brenda Fassi with the song Noma Kanje. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your phones, vehicles, and homes. Please remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Oh,